B2B marketing and sales can be tough to master. Sales cycles can be long, and buyers are notoriously difficult to close. That's why you need Minds On at your side. We're a B2B marketing and digital agency that's helped more than 200 clients evolve their brands, win more business, and succeed more often. And we're ready to help you. Visit www.mindson.com today to schedule your no-obligation consultation. Now, on to today's program.
I'm your host, Dan Harris, and welcome back to another episode of Minds On B2B. Thank you so much, everyone, for clicking, subscribing, sharing, downloading, and of course, listening to our podcast. This is a weekly show dedicated to helping busy B2B executives, marketers, and sales professionals stay informed, learn something new, and perhaps apply a lesson learned or run with an idea shared by our guests. As we say at Minds On, all of our minds together are better than any one mind alone. Who knows? You just might like what you hear, connect, and network with us.
Welcome back, everyone, and thanks for tuning in. This week, we're turning our focus to leadership. In B2B organizations and businesses, leadership is a key to the success of any organization. Dennis Brower is a decorated Navy veteran, professional innovator, a dynamic keynote speaker, and a best-selling author. In today's episode, Dennis will share with us how he has successfully navigated large, complex B2B companies and the skill and action he used to win over his teams, turn around a business, and elevate his career and become a leading authority, best-selling author, and sought-after speaker on the topic of leadership. Welcome to the podcast, Dennis.
Great. Thanks, Dan. Always good to be here.
Well, let's jump right in. Can you set the stage for us and tell us more about the first skill needed to be an effective leader?
Okay. So the first essential here really refers to the very first step in a leader's new journey. And I know that's an often used term, but that's really one way to think about the psychology of the leader as we move through a new leadership role, into a new position and through that role. So if you accept a new management role, which many of us have at one point or another in our career, we think about the new things that come with that, right? We maybe have a new boss. We might have new peers that we're working with. We might have a new office, might have a new paycheck. We might have a new place to go to work, might have a new commute. We might have a lot of new things. But one of the things that sets very effective leaders apart from those who are still striving to become very effective is that when they step into a management role, they realize that on day one, they have just joined three teams. Now, that's something that a perspective that has some people scratching their heads, but let me explain. So the first team, the easiest, most obvious team to think about as your manager is the group of people that you refer to as my team. These are your direct reports and the people who work for your direct reports. It could be two or three people. It could be hundreds or thousands or tens of thousands of people, I suppose, in some of our larger organizations. But when we think of, when we use the phrase my team, that's what we tend to refer to. Now, the second team that you've joined is your boss's team, right? Because we all have a boss. Even if you're the chief executive, you've got a board of directors that you're reporting to. So we all have a boss. And in that role, I would suggest that we are followers. Now, some people quibble with that. There's a bit of pride that goes around declaring yourself as a leader and being reluctant to refer to yourself as a follower. But the fact is, we've just joined our boss's team. And in that role, you know, we may be leading from below, but the fact is that we're a follower. So that's team number two. Now, team number three is the one that's most often neglected. And in my experience and in the data and the research that exists around creative leadership, in many cases, this is the team that really sets a leader apart in terms of their ability to impact the organization, to form a highly believable and worthy vision for the future, and to make that vision a reality. And that's the team of your peers. Now, we may think about we have friends at work and they may tend to be at the same level that we are and they work in other organizations, but this is a little different. I had a bit of a taste of this when I was in the Navy because I flew in a crew of four people. And when we were in the airplane, you know, there's the old phrase of there's rank has its privileges, but there's also that there's no rank in the cockpit. So when we were in the airplane, we were a team of peers and we worked very effectively. The best results came from the best crews. So that was really my first flavor of that, the crew concept that goes around that. But I also had a very vivid reminder of that when I moved into a product management role at Savvis. And that's where my new boss suggested to me, actually directed me, to conduct a monthly business review. And for me to do a monthly business review, I needed to reach outside my organization. Because one of the noteworthy things about product management is that you have a tremendous amount of responsibility for things like innovation and revenue growth and customer satisfaction, but you have very little authority because most of the functional areas that you're working with, virtually all of them, are not under your control. So what I had to do in that setting was to create a third team. Now, I had great support from management. I had peers who were very eager to get on board with helping to figure out what was going on with the business and create a path going forward. But what that third team turned into was a great forum for us to really air our differing opinions of what was going on with the business, to have very detailed conversations about that where we worked out those differences, and then a forum for collaboration. And it really happened in three phases. There was the preparation for the monthly meeting, in which we all had to examine our parts of responsibility and create and study the metrics that we had to contribute to the rest of the team. There was the actual crucible of the meeting, 2 hours. And I don't mean it was highly contentious or anything, but it was a great open discussion, right? It was a discussion where there truly was no rank in the cockpit. And the third was we had a program manager who really was there to make sure, we like to say, to make the trains run on time. But really what it's all about is to make sure that we follow through on the promises and commitments that we made in that meeting. And what we found was that really one of the keys to turning around this business, and it was a pretty sizable business, about $300 million, a little bit less, in annual revenue. One of the keys to turning this around was, first of all, using that third team to develop a consistent view of what was actually happening in the business, what was good and what was bad and what was ugly. And once we agreed on that, once we could be honest about that, we really had a working forum to sort through those issues. Now, I will tell you that we didn't agree on everything. We didn't get everything done that we wanted to do. And sometimes I'm not even sure we really liked each other all that much. But the great thing about a third team is that you don't necessarily have to like each other. You don't have to be friends. You just have to agree that we're going to come together to work on something that's bigger than any one of us or any one of our functions. And real progress just begins to happen. So joining three teams is all about the principle of pervasive engagement, in that for highly effective, highly creative leaders, they realize that by stepping into the middle of an organization, if it's closer to the bottom or closer to the top of the org chart, it doesn't really matter. If you step into the middle of that organization and you take this view of, I'm a member of three teams, that is, I look down into my org chart, I look up into my boss's org chart, or I look across the org chart, I now become a point of strength in the organization, a point of consistency, and I can now be that point in the organization that from which I can broadcast a consistent set of values, approaches, and a mindful and thoughtful approach to the challenges that we face and follow through on the plans that we've collaboratively created and communicated.
You know, I never really thought about three teams and the importance of engaging those teams strategically. And the example you shared with the three teams coming together and all moving in the same direction makes a lot of sense. And it sounds like pervasive engagement seems pretty important. But what happens when you don't have pervasive engagement?
Yeah, so that principle of pervasive engagement is a really important one. And I'll use an example of what happens when you don't have pervasive engagement. As a leadership coach, when I've stepped into organizations that are challenged, right, where typically they're not growing in the metrics that are important to them, and quite often that's revenue and profitability. You step into an organization that's kind of flat, and maybe it's been flat for a while. What you tend to find is that there are two levels, there are two parallel conversations that are going on, right? So you'll sit in a meeting where everybody's together. On the surface, it's all very polite. People are nice, and there's a little banter going back and forth. The discussion during the meeting tends to be, again, very polite. There are very few contentious issues that are raised. And as a new person in that scenario, whether you're an employee or whether you're a coach, you go, okay, well, this feels pretty civil. Now, the following conversations where you meet with individuals, the first thing that you're told is, hey, can you close the door? And that's when you hear the other conversation. And that's where people go, hey, I know you were in that meeting the other day and everything seemed just great and just hunky-dory and everybody was really nice, but here's what's really going on. And that's when you hear the organizational issues. And you hear that's where you hear all the Shakespearean stuff, right? About promises made, promises broken, funding we had, funding that was yanked, person who was here, the impact that they had, how they left, or a person that is in over their heads. You hear all that other stuff. But the problem is when it's done behind closed doors and it's only, you know, somebody spills their guts to somebody who's an outsider who's going to, guess what, close their portfolio, put their pen away and walk out the door in an hour or two or a week or a month. The problem is that those problems are typically well understood from a single person's perspective at a single point in time, and there's no forum there to go back and hash that stuff out. So ultimately what it leads to is a culture where you have nice public meetings at which real issues are never surfaced, much less discussed, much less solved, and you end up with an overall strategy that's just sort of drifting because the really essential things about questions like staffing and what are we going to work on tomorrow? What's the most important thing for us to get done today and next week and next month and by the end of this year? You really can't do that because you really can't have those conversations because opinions are held behind closed doors, but opinions are never forced to confront each other to determine, opinions aside, what are the facts in this case? What are we actually dealing with? So if we can genuinely develop these three teams and bring people together to have open and honest discussions about not just their feelings, not just their emotions, not just about things that happened in the past, but where we're taking this organization and what we each need to do to make that a reality. That's where that principle of pervasive engagement, engaging with my team, my peers, and my boss's team in a consistent and open way, that's where that becomes just really tremendously powerful.
Sounds like to me, in order to have pervasive engagement happen in an organization, the people and the teams need to be aligned. And they need to be aligned to what's best for the business and the customer. Is that true or am I off base?
They do need to align. But I think the other key point there is that that alignment can't be trivial, right? So we can't have meetings where people say, hey, we all want the best for the company, all want the best for the customer. That's certainly true. But let's face it, I mean, that's motherhood and apple pie. What we really have to be able to say is, look, we're aligned around getting to 6% revenue growth. And what that means is that we have to align around the things that we're going to do to shrink the number of customer losses that we have, to shrink the number of product deinstalls that we have, and we have to improve our prospecting and our close rate. Now let's break that down into specific plans that we can agree on. So that alignment has to be deep. And that's why this three levels, if you think about it, the three teams that you join engages three levels of the organization, which automatically gives that kind of muscular and resilient depth to initiatives and meaning to the priorities that we set. So that alignment has to be consistent across layers in the organization.
All right. You share with us that three teams exist, yours, your bosses, and your peers. We've talked about what pervasive engagement should be and what happens when you don't have it, and the importance of alignment among teams and the organizations you'll lead. Are you able to share a real life story where you applied this principle and the first skill and tell us about the results?
All right. So once upon a time, I was hired to come in and run product management at a network services business that I was told during the interview process had just completed a product launch and that the product launch for some mysterious reason had failed. I was directed by my boss to dig into this by creating this cross-functional, across the white space team that would, you know, that would work together to try to figure out what was going on in the business. And we would sort things out from there. Now, there were not natural working relationships between the various organizations. There was no formal authority that went along with the charter, right? So it's a classic case of you've got the responsibility and none of the authority. As it was said in Hollywood many decades ago, you're going to rely on the kindness of strangers. And guess what? Business doesn't work very well when you rely on the kindness of strangers. So what it really did require us to do was to come up with a common perspective on the business, which, you know, that, again, that sounds like motherhood and apple pie. Can we just agree on where this thing's going? But when the perspectives, in this case, the perspectives at the front end of the challenge, if you will, were not that easily reconciled. And, you know, it surfaced in a number of ways. One was at a meeting of the top 100 managers in the company. The CEO at that time challenged the top 100 managers to come up with the top three strategic things that they needed to do. And the number one thing, number two in a couple of cases, but the number one thing for virtually every one of those 10 teams that they said was they wanted to sell my business at any cost, get rid of this turkey, cut this albatross around our neck, throw the millstone away, whatever your analogy is, we've got to get rid of this thing. It's just like, I was hired to actually kind of get this thing growing again. So, you know, we started with a polar opposite perspective on where the business needed to go. And what we finally settled on was, okay, let's say we do want to sell it. We can't sell it in the conditions it's in. So it's like selling a car with four flat tires and that's trailing smoke. If your strategy is really built around find the greater fool, well, that's really not much of a strategy, right? That's a con game. So it's like, okay, great. Let's say we are going to sell it at some point in the future. In the meantime, we got to fix this thing up, right? We got to stem the bleeding. We got to stem the losses. We've got to deal with it. And that then finally took us to the point where for us to begin to build that fabric of that team, it came down to the essential action that flows from all of this. And it's really based on a human psychological principle called reciprocity. And it became very popular after Dr. Bob Cialdini wrote a book called Influence, Science and Practice. And it basically says that if you do something for another person, preferably a kind act or a gesture, that they feel inclined to respond in kind. So the essential action here is as you're engaging with those other teams, the temptation is to go in and be the, you know, to be the powerful leader and go, okay, here's what I need from you. And people go, well, yeah, right. What's in it for me? Right. And then you're immediately framed that discussion as a negative. I'm taking. And the essential action is, as you now begin to form a relationship with your peers, because that's what this is, a working relationship, your approach should not be a demand, this is what I need from you. Your approach should be a question, what do you need from me? Now, we know, we've agreed that, at least in the short term, we got to get this thing back on its feet. We know that's not going to happen without participation from all of our groups. I now, as the product manager with a ton of responsibility and zero authority, I need you on board. And the easiest way for me to get you on board and doing what I want done is for me to understand what you need from me. Is it funding? Is it air cover with your boss? Is it for us to explain to, you know, some other part of the organization how your organization is being set up to fail? What is it? Let's have an open conversation about it. What do you need from me? Now, in the process, I, as the new leader in the organization, I've just learned about what's actually going on in the organization, which is great. I've learned how another function works, and I've learned what that function is up against, whether it's service delivery or operations or engineering or sales or marketing or legal or finance. And those are all groups that we work with in that. But what I found is that once I gained an understanding of that other leader's perspective and the business needs of their organization, it changed the question I would ask. And it changed the things that I realized I needed from them. So that conversation that began with, what do you need from me, turned into, okay, if that's what you need from me, I can deliver that. In return, here's what I need from you. And it just changed the nature of that from a contentious negotiation to a collaborative working process. And, you know, this is a story that's in chapter 6 of my book, The Return on Leadership. But over the course of about 2 years, we were able to turn around a business that had been shrinking at about 8% a year, which I'm telling you, in a service business feels like free fall. You're growing at 3%, which was the same growth rate as AT&T and Verizon and the rest of the industry had in managed services at that point. So if you just flow through this and you start with a mindset that says, as I'm stepping into this role, I'm joining three teams, and thinking about those three teams deliberately allows me to apply that concept or that principle of pervasive engagement and really understanding, you know, my responsibility in each one of those roles. You think about that in settings where you don't have formal authority. You have a ton of responsibility, but you don't have the authority, so you can't just order people around, which is a terrible way to do business anyway. And that you begin those relationships by sincerely asking and then listening to the response to a question, what do you need from me? You're already miles down the path of becoming a net positive of the organization and maybe the organization's secret weapon.
Dennis, I learned a lot, and I'm looking forward to becoming that secret weapon. So if others want to contact you, learn more about your book, coaching or speaking, how would you like them to look you up?
Okay. My book is called The Return on Leadership, and it's available on Amazon all around the world. You can learn more about The Return on Leadership, about the work that I do, and about the 11 Essentials, which is what I'm speaking about. The Return on Leadership is actually one of the principles inside that, by going to my website, which is D.L. Brouwer, spelled B-R-O-U-W-E-R.com. It's the Dutch derivation, so it's spelled just like on a bottle of Heineken. Or Amstel Light. Of course, I'm out on Twitter and Instagram and LinkedIn and happy to connect with anybody there. But just Dennis at dlbrouwer.com or dlbrouwer.com.
It has been a pleasure having you on the show, and I look forward to learning so much more on future episodes. On behalf of our listeners, thank you so much. So, listeners, here's where you come in. If you have ideas for possible episode topics, like to be on the guest of the show, or know someone that would be a great B2B teacher or coach, make sure to connect with me on LinkedIn. You can find me by searching Danny D. Harris. You can also send me an email with the subject line, Minds on B2B Idea or Guest, to dan.harris@mindson.com. The more input we get from listeners, the more the listeners, the better the podcast is going to be. So make sure to subscribe to iTunes or your favorite podcast player. And until next time, this is Dan Harris. Stay curious, connect often, and learn always.
Thanks for listening to today's Minds on B2B podcast. If you like what you heard today, please subscribe. Also, feel free to share this episode with your peers and colleagues so we can keep bringing you quality content from the best minds in B2B. Until next time, from all of us at Minds On, have a great week.